Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by SuperValu Insurance, looking out for you and yours with our new life and mortgage protection insurance.
But look, first this morning, one of Ireland's finest comedians and a proud son of Offaly, Neil Delamere, is well known for his storytelling on stage, his regular appearances on TV panel shows, and his documentaries on subjects like the Vikings. Neil played his very first Edinburgh Fringe Festival in 2004, 20 years ago this year, and he has a new tour coming out in the UK and Ireland. And if that's not enough, he also hosts a podcast with Today FM's Dave Moore. Neil Delamere, good morning to you. Welcome to studio.
Thank you very much.
Now listen, we have to start on the chase. Yeah. It is the biggest show in ITV.
Yeah, pretty much. Maybe I'm a celeb version, might slightly beat it, but yeah, as a regular thing, it's pretty much the biggest thing on it. Yeah, pleasure to do it. It was on last night and my phone went a little bit crazy after it was on.
So Tom, it was recorded 2 years ago. First of all,
it was. The guts of 2 years ago, and I was, because I know what happened, and it was extremely exciting, and I couldn't tell anybody. So you can tell people who you were on with before it airs, okay. But you can't say what happened, and you cannot say who the chaser is, because that's the big reveal and stuff, yeah. You know. So yeah, 2 years ago, and that's just the way things land, isn't it? Like
yeah.
I did that 2 years ago. I did Between the Covers, which is a book show.
Yeah.
Like 2 months ago, and I did QI like 9 months ago, and they're all out in the next week. So people are going to get sick of you and they think, oh God, you're everywhere. Actually, it's not your fault. I didn't schedule it this way. I'm so sorry that you're just exposed to this all in 1 or 2 weeks, but it's just the way it lands. So I was just... I mean, I can tell people what happened now if you missed it.
Yeah, it's interesting because your chaser, of course, was the Irish chaser who was on with Oliver earlier in the week,
yeah.
Dara Ennis. For anyone who doesn't know the chase, give
yeah.
it like a 20-second synopsis and
okay.
You won a lot of money for charity.
So, yeah, Celebrity Chase, you play for charity. I play for the Alzheimer's Society. And you basically, there's four people in the team and you do a cash builder round. So you have to try and get a load of money into a pot and then you go up against the chaser. So when I went up against the chaser, the other three had gone and there was about 17 grand in the pot. And then what happens is you're last, they tempt you with more money and they tempt you and they go, and it was weird because the producer comes up and goes, listen, you're going to go next and I think there will be a higher offer, but no pressure. And they're looking at you going, you don't have to take it, but they mean we'd love you to take it, but they can't say that. But they're like, yeah. You know, you don't have to take it. Like, you know, in mafia films where they go into
yeah.
a shop and they knock something off the shelf and they go, oh, no, it'd be an awful shame if that another thing was to be knocked off the shelf, wouldn't it? There's that slight air of, just do it. So they offered me 103 grand to go closer to them. So you've one fewer question. So what was really sweet on that, by the way, it's a slight detour, is that I knew, or Dara knew me, because it's a big show and you're not as well known maybe as somebody like Helen Lederer, who's a Blackadder actress, who's been a comedic actress for ages, and Jamie Borthwick was from EastEnders and Jasmine Harmon was from Place in the Sun, so they're very much UK
yeah.
in the zeitgeist celebrities. And then somebody comes out and some people won't know you, lots of people won't know you, and Dara was so sweet because he goes, oh, I was been to his shows in Figure Street, and it was really kind of two Irish lads abroad kind of hugging each other virtually. Do you know what I mean? He was really sweet
so
about
nice.
That. It was really nice, yeah. And then, so I won 103 grand, put that into the pot. There was 120 grand in the final chase. Going, and then you play against him and we won 120,000 pounds for charity with about half second spare. So it's great television.
Did you love it? Is it
yeah.
terrifying and
exciting? Of course, terrifying. Absolutely terrifying. I did Mastermind, and the weird thing about Mastermind is I read recently, because I was working with somebody who's worked on Mastermind, he goes, you know the theory of Mastermind? I said, no. And he goes, the guy who invented Mastermind was a POW. He was an RAF POW, and when he designed Mastermind in the late 60s or early 70s, it's designed to be like an interrogation. So you're not meant to see Magnus Magnusson originally, and he was called the interrogator, and that whole thing where, you know, you say name, rank, serial number,
yeah.
it was name, occupation and specialist subject. It's all designed, so that's really tense, and the music is really tense.
What was your subject?
The Vikings. I picked the Vikings.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. I picked the Vikings, and another girl who won The Apprentice picked The Wolf of Wall Street to film. 2 hours. I'm reading about 400 years of history and she does 2 hours of Leonardo DiCaprio, and she did quite well as well. That's more tense because they play and all the music and all the rest. Bradley Walsh kind of keeps things a little bit light, but it's still it's still like a big audience and it's Saturday night and it's very exciting.
You love quiz shows because you also like were showing you did the countdown for Halloween just now dressed in a costume.
Dressed as Frankenstein's monster. Yeah, it was just bizarre. They said, listen, first time ever we're going to do Countdown and dress up as people for Halloween. And it's never been, 42 years Countdown has been on TV. It's the first ever show on Channel 4 when it was the station. I used to watch it with my mum.
Yeah.
And I said, of course I'll do it. So they dressed me up as Frankenstein's monster and I could barely talk in the mask. But it was good crack. And just
you looked amazing.
Well, thank you very much.
Amazing makeup. Like, seriously. Yeah. You looked
you looked amazing. Amazing makeup. Thanks for that.
Why, by the way, for the chase, did you choose the Alzheimer's Society?
Because there's people in my family. My mum, she's no longer with us.
Okay.
She had dementia towards the end of her life. And if I ever do anything for... You have to pick charities if you do bits and pieces of those shows. And I did. You have to, oddly enough, well, not oddly enough, it makes complete sense. You have to pick a UK registered charity. So I did like Fittest Family here, and that would have been Alzheimer's Society of Ireland. But there, I did Alzheimer's Society of the UK. So I don't mind who gets the money. Everybody. I mean, they do such great work. They come
Absolutely.
In with, you know, and they sit with people, and they have just that's the simple act of coming in and talking to somebody and listening to their stories and having a human connection with somebody is so important. So that's the one I always pick, you know, because of the work they do. And particularly because obviously the Alzheimer's Society is the UK, would affect Northern Ireland. They do a lot of work in Northern Ireland. So hopefully the bulk of it will go there. But it doesn't really matter to me where it goes.
Because you grew up in Edenderry.
Edenderry, County Offaly, yeah.
And your dad is going strong?
He is, yeah. To be honest with you now, I didn't realise it was going to be 2 years before this. My dad's 89 and I was talking to the chase people going, put the show out, please. Because my dad was going, I'm 89. Put the show out, please. I want to see the show. So, yeah, he's absolutely flying.
Yeah,
and
great.
Bradley Walsh asked me last night, he says, where are you from? And I said, I'm from the bogs of Ireland. And you know, and I am. And I'm proud. Bog of Allen, man, you know, my father worked for Border Mona for kind of 40 years and loves a quiz. I'm not even the quizzer in the family. My brother is an All-Ireland champion.
Seriously?
Yeah. The GEA quiz, him and three other guys, where every single parish plays off against each other and then they go to an All-Ireland final and he's won that. So I'm kind of in the hippity place compared to the rest
of them. What's his first name?
Ian. Yeah.
And listen, were you always going to end up in comedy, like growing up in Edenderry?
No. Well, people forget, I suppose, that there is no... Like, there was no comedy clubs, there was no YouTube, and there was no... So how do you get exposed to it? So people like John Kenny, God rest his soul, John Kenny and Pat were going around. I remember seeing them in Vicar Street and being blown away.
Yeah.
Because there were also other cultures, you know? So you were exposed to it. The only stand-up on TV was... And this was formative as well. The only other stand-up on TV was the stand-up show, which was on BBC One late at night. And Ardal hosted it, and then Tommy hosted it. And suddenly these are other lads who kind of look like you and sound like you, and you go, oh.
No.
And something kind of ticks off in your brain, but you're only 15 or 16.
Yeah.
So I did it as a dare kind of in college, and then just loved it and just wanted to do it a little bit. And then it kind of just took off from there.
Wasn't it in 2004 it took off? Well, you were on The Late Late with Pat Kenny, I think.
Yeah.
And
you
went to Edinburgh for the first time.
Yeah.
Do you remember that late date? And do you remember
The Late Late? Yeah, it's there somewhere. Like, we didn't realise quite how big The Late Late or how scary it would be to do comedy in The Late Late, I suppose.
Yeah.
And there's a bit in the middle of it where, like, I'm 21 and I blank. But it was going well. And I said to the audience, you all enjoying yourselves? And they go, eh. And I go, good. And then by the time they'd say good, I'd remember the next line. But if you look at it, there's like blind panic in my face. And but yeah, we won a competition. And in that stage, they gave you a couple of quid to spend on equipment. And I thought, this will pay my rent for a little bit. And I might just kind of take a little time out, little hiatus from my job. I was a software engineer, a computer programmer, and just never looked back, really.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
And was Edinburgh important?
It was, yeah. Man, the early days in Edinburgh. Oh, my God. People ask you, do many people go? Nobody goes. Like, the average audience in Edinburgh is 4 people. So I'll never forget the first year I did it, my agent handed me a box of chocolates for getting through the run in Edinburgh. And I gave a chocolate to every member of the audience that night and didn't get through to the second layer of the box of chocolates.
That is so
cool. Like, there was no... People didn't go. They hadn't heard of you. And you just kind of slowly build it. And You know, you earn your chops, really, you know.
That is so good. And, you know, the kind of jokes and stories you told then.
Yeah.
Do you do them now? Or has anything changed much?
I mean, I do a lot of kind of topical stuff in the north in particular. And that's very handy because nothing changes. Sadly, you know, Stormont goes in, Stormont comes out. There's extremes on both sides. So, you know, you can kind of, that's very good for comedy because it's very easy to mock. Stuff, I think there's universal things that, so when you're doing topical comedy, obviously, it's gone. It's transient. It's kind of chewing gum in some ways. But, you know, things, certain names and people will, and stories will change. So when I'm doing a tour, I kind of try and think about, I'm going to be doing this in 9 months from now. So I will talk about the time I met Mary McCallan. I will talk about my dad. No. I'll talk about my car or whatever. Something that will last for 9 or 10 months, you know. But the stories, no, I kind of still find the same silly things funny.
I love, but the thing you do in the North, I love the blame game with Jim McGarry. He's funny. Tell me the time going to the...
McGarry, yeah. Myself and McGarry went to the Champions League final. He got me very posh tickets. And so we went to Liverpool, Real Madrid, and that was the one where they were tear gassing people. So the tear gas people, and it was coming towards us, French police. They were not very pleasant at all. And but they had forgotten that Tim McGarry grew up in North Belfast in the 70s. McGarry laughed in their face pretty much. Like, we all had tears in our eyes, I said to him, but his were from nostalgia. So I'm like just like a soft southerner going, what's going on? He's like, it's just a wee bit of atmosphere. It's just a wee bit of atmosphere. Because the RUC used to call this Republican incense. So he was kind of unperturbed by the whole thing. Like, we walk around the corner and there's a French copper and he has this kind of thing that fires them. And Tim's like, keep your elbow tucked in now and aim it high. He was just completely undisturbed by the whole thing. And I was kind of freaking out a bit. But McGarry is my guiding light sometimes. So I've done a lot of work in the north. So I can kind of, most of the time, he says, touch wood, you know, you walk through the vagaries of it.
Yeah.
And if there's anything, I go, is that the right reference? He goes, yeah, that's the right reference. So every so often I'll check something with him, you know.
Yeah. And, how, you know, because northern humour, do you think it's different?
Yeah.
To what? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Next question.
Like,
I do not recognise the rank of the person who asked me the question. I think it's slightly darker. I think Belfast is slightly darker for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
Because comedians love that.
Yeah.
Because comedians tend to have dark sense of humour because they've seen everything. So I do like there's a little bit of an edge in Belfast. So I absolutely love Belfast. Like,
yeah.
You,
of course, around your early career, you did the panel here.
Yeah.
That was a great platform for you and for other Irish comedians, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. That's the thing about a panel show. I kind of think they should be still doing one for that particular reason. Well, one, obviously, listen, like, there hasn't been a panel show on RTE, so through Brexit, through, you know what I mean, through Trump, through Storm and through all that, you know, it's funny that there's so much news and it's not being kind of attacked in a silly way by comedians. But that is the wider point, is it acts as a kind of a recruitment platform for people, because you're not picking someone and just going, here's the John and Mary show.
Yeah.
You're going, John and Mary go on to this panel show, and you slowly get fed little bits and pieces of John and Mary. So there isn't as much pressure on them. And then eventually they can go on and make their own shows. So it's a good, like, if you look at Mock the Week, or you look at the panel, there's loads of people who came from that and then went on to do their own things.
Because they got an outing there. And
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I always think it's nice about lots of you Irish comedians, like whether it's Dara O'Brien or you mentioned Tommy there and stuff, like, they're very collegiate, aren't they? Like, I know you're competitive, but you do seem to be actually quite supportive of each other.
Yeah, once you do well. they're very collegiate. Sure, how would they not be? Aren't they? Sure, they're flying. It's nice and easy to be gracious when you're absolutely flying. Ah, no, it is it's a broadly supportive thing. But I think it's probably like, say there's 80 comedians in Ireland. It's like any workplace with 80 people in it, you know.
Yeah.
You've got 5 people you don't get on with. You've got 70 people you really, you know, really get on with. And then there's 5 really good mates that you grew up with and work together with. And like Bernard O'Shea would have been one of my... Like,
good
I remember giving Bernard a lift back from gigs in my mother's little red starlet and him going, I'm joining the guards. I'm, you know, so two of us would have died at some gig somewhere. I'm joining the guards. And I'm like, it's fine for you. I'm not tall enough to join the guards. You can join the guards. And he came from a long line of guards. And he goes, I'll get you in. I said, you can't get me in. So we had been through the wars and we had the weird gigs we used to do, man. I did a gig once and it was in Armagh. They'd won a competition to have the gig. And it was a pub had won a competition to win the gig. Yeah, it was through a brewery. So you turned up to just, it wasn't a venue, it was just a pub. And we turned up and I said, is there anything for us to wait backstage? And your man went, yeah, go into the kitchen here. I went into the kitchen, there was a coffin on the table. And he went, don't look in that. So I just sat there for 20 minutes with a coffin for 25 minutes before we went down. And they're all the weird formative experiences before you do the chase 15 years later.
Yeah, I heard Ardal on the other day. He was very funny about it as well. And also I heard Ray during the week, Ray Darcy, mentioned Blackboard Jungle, and someone suggested to him, you know, he should bring back the original teams to compete against each other as adults. Would you be on for that?
Well, funny enough, I did a show about about doing Blackboard Jungle a million years ago, and I got the two teams back together. And Ray, we green screened it with Ray, and he asked questions and stuff. Man, the prizes are hilarious. Like the prizes, if you look at them now, the prizes we got, we won a two book world dictionary. All the knowledge of the world in two books. Like there's 10 Harry Potter books. We got two books. And there was a minibus as well, I think, if you won the whole series. And there was a Walkman, which I still have and stuff. It would be great nostalgic television.
Now, tell me about writing your new show. You've been working on this new tour. Love the name of it, Achilles Neil.
Achilles Neil. I always go a stupid pun. So I've had Fresh Prince of Delamere, which is one of my favourites. Creme Delamere is another one, popular at the airport. And this current one, I had Neil by Mouth last year. So this one's called Achilles Neil, yeah. And it's just kind of, I suppose, about the foibles and the weird little things that have happened to you in the last year. And we like to talk about our weaknesses. And I suppose an Achilles heel and an Achilles Neil kind of ties in together. So myself and Colin Murphy did High Road, Low Road for RTE.
Yeah.
We will be talking about that. One of the most fun things I've ever done on television, I did Zoo Live, and they said, will you hold the tiger's tail while we draw blood from the tiger to check the medication level of the tiger? And I was like, yes, I will. So there's 10 minutes of that in it. So if you want to be here, we talk about that. It's all around the country, and the tickets are on neildelamere.com.
Yeah. Does it take you long to write a show like that? Like how long would it take you?
You're always kind of tapping away. I do a show every year. So you're always tapping away. Well, it's like when you do Vic Street or Cork Everyman Theatre or whatever, you cannot go in there not knowing that it works. So you have to start with 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there, and you go into small little venues.
Testing it almost.
And you jump on and, you know, there's three other acts on the bill and you can go, can I have 10 minutes? And you slowly, slowly, slowly build it up. So it takes 6 months or however long writing, you know.
Does it ever get less terrifying? I always think the hardest thing must be to go out onto a stage as a stand-up comedian. I mean, is it terrifying?
No. You know what I think is more terrifying? And I've talked to Ardal about this. Ardal does proper acting, like plays and the like. I think that's terrifying.
Really?
Because
you've got lines, kind of.
You have lines, but if I miss my line, you're waiting for my cue. I'm responsible for other people then. Whereas I'm only responsible for myself on a stage. So if I mess it up, one, I can kind of probably get a laugh from going, God, I messed that up. But two, you know, I've only let myself down, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
What an Irish Catholic thing to say. I haven't grown up.
It's lovely.
The guilt is my own. I shall bear these scars forever. But what it does is it constantly kicks your backside, comedy. So when you think you have a bit, you get a bit better at figuring out what bit works, but it'll always kick your backside that goes, no, it's not there's something in it, but it's not the thing you thought. Mm-hmm. It's the fourth line from the end is the funniest line. It's not the end line. Mm-hmm. And the end line, and then you put the fourth line at the end. But it's the only art form, when you think about it, if you can call it an art form, it's quite pretentious, but anyway, where the audience decides what it is. So you start. Michelangelo didn't do Michelangelo's David and go out and go, does anybody want me to make any changes to this? I'm not comparing what I do, by the way, to Michelangelo's David. But whereas you go and you go to an audience and go, is this any good? Is this any good? And they mould it for you, and then you eventually get a show. So they're very much part of the process.
It's a brilliant thing to do. I mean, you do all the TV gigs. You've got the podcast with Dave, I said. Is touring still your main driver? Like, does everything else have to work around touring?
Yeah.
And like, I know you're doing Vicar Street, something like that. Yeah.
I'm doing Vicar Street. I'm doing, like, I do the Ice Hockey Arena in Belfast. I'm doing like every town. Have a look. It is, because oddly enough, it's the thing that you can control as well. So television is cyclical, and somebody in a room might decide somewhere, you know, something, I don't like that anymore. runs course, try this. So touring is a thing that you can control, and people come out to see you, and they will come out to see you as long as you're good, hopefully. And they're quite loyal, you know. Mm-hmm. I've had people come every year, 15, 16 years, and now they know each other in the front row in Vicar Street.
That's so good.
And they make friends with each other.
Now, you mentioned earlier briefly the BBC book show Between the Covers, which is fab. You picked that beautiful Ronan Hessian book.
Oh, what a lovely
book. Tell us the name
book.
Of it again.
It's called Leonard and Hungry Paul.
Beautiful.
Yeah. I hadn't heard of it. My wife said, read this book. It's unlike anything else you've ever read. So I'd heartily recommend it. It's a book about two introverts, and there's no books about introverts, you know.
Yeah,
and there's no bad people in the book as well. It's just really sweet.
Yeah,
so, yeah,
it's a beautiful book. Well, look, Neil Delamere, thanks so much for coming in to me this
pleasure.
Morning. And best of luck with your Achilles Neil tour. Great title. Loads of dates, as you say, both in the UK and here in Ireland, including Galway, Limerick, Belfast, Vicar Street, plenty of other venues right around the country. And all the dates are on your website.
NeilDelamere.com.
NeilDelamere.com. Very quickly, a text goes, Neil absolutely smashed the chase last night. Our 9-year-old son, Leo, was shouting for Neil and thrilled he and the team beat the chaser. And Leo reckons Neil should be a chaser. He's so brainy. Well, there you go. A 9-year-old said that. Thanks so much
for
coming
Leo.
In this morning.
What
and best of luck with the tour. We'll take a break.